Now, as Lina sped toward home, she felt immensely grateful to Dune and hoped he'd come to no harm in the pipeworks. Maybe they'd be friends again. She'd like to ask him about the pipeworks. She was curious about it. When she got to Greystone Street, she passed Clary Lane, who was probably on her way to the greenhouses. Clary waved to her and called out, "What job?" And Lina called back, "Messenger," and ran on. Lina lived in Quilliam Square, over the yarn shop run by her grandmother. When she got to the shop, she burst in the door and cried, "Granny, I'm a messenger!" Granny's shop had once been a tidy place, where each ball of yarn and spool of thread had its spot in the cubbyholes that lined the walls. All the yarn and thread came from old clothes that had gotten too shabby to be worn. Granny unraveled sweaters and picked apart dresses and jackets and pants. She wound the yarn into balls and the thread onto spools, and people bought them to use in making new clothes. These days, the shop was a mess. Long loops and strands of yarn dangled out of the cubbyholes, and the browns and grays and purples were mixed in with the ochres and olive greens and dark blues. Granny's customers often had to spend half an hour unsnarling the rust-red yarn from the mud brown or trying to fish out the end of a thread from a tangled wad. Granny wasn't much help. Most days, she just dozed behind the counter in her rocking chair. That's where she was when Lina burst in with her news. Lina saw that Granny had forgotten to knot up her hair that morning. It was standing out from her head in a wild white frizz. Granny stood up, looking puzzled.
"You aren't a messenger, dear. You're a schoolgirl," she said.
"But, Granny, today was assignment day. I got my job, and I'm a messenger."
Granny's eyes lit up, and she slapped her hand down on the counter.
"I remember," she cried. "Messenger, that's a grand job. You'll be good at it."
Lina's little sister toddled out from behind the counter on unsteady legs. She had a round face and round brown eyes. At the top of her head was a sprig of brown hair tied up with a scrap of red yarn. She grabbed on to Lina's knees.
"Lina, Lina," she said.
Lina bent over and took the child's hands.
"Poppy, your big sister got a good job. Are you happy, Poppy? Are you proud of me?"
Poppy said something that sounded like,
"Happy, happy, happy."
Lina laughed, hoisted her up, and danced with her around the shop. Lina loved her little sister so much that it was like an ache under her ribs. The baby and Granny were all the family she had now. 2 years ago, when the coughing sickness was raging through the city again, her father had died. Some months later, her mother, giving birth to Poppy, had died too. Lina missed her parents with an ache that was as strong as what she felt for Poppy, only it was a hollow feeling instead of a full one.
"When do you start?" asked Granny.
"Tomorrow," said Lina. "I report to the messenger station at 8 o'clock.
"You'll be a famous messenger," said Granny. "Fast and famous."
Taking Poppy with her, Lina went out of the shop and climbed the stairs to their apartment. It was a small apartment, only 4 rooms, but there was enough stuff in it to fill 20. There were things that had belonged to Lina's parents, her grandparents, and even their grandparents. Old, broken, cracked, threadbare things that had been patched and repaired dozens or hundreds of times. People in Ember rarely threw anything away. They made the best possible use of what they had. In Lina's apartment, layers of worn rugs and carpets covered the floor, making it soft but uneven underfoot. Against one wall squatted a sagging couch with round wooden balls for legs, and on the couch were blankets and pillows, so many that you had to toss some on the floor before you could sit down. Against the opposite wall stood 2 wobbly tables that held a clutter of plates and bottles, cups and bowls, unmatching forks and spoons, little piles of scrap paper, bits of string wound up in untidy wads, and a few stubby pencils. There were four lamps, two tall ones that stood on the floor, and two short ones that stood on tables. And in uneven lines, up near the ceiling, were hooks that held coats and shawls and nightgowns and sweaters, shelves that held pots and pans, jars with unreadable labels, and boxes of buttons and pins and tacks. Where there were no shelves, the walls had been decorated with things of beauty. A label from a can of peaches, a few dried yellow squash flowers, a strip of faded but still pretty purple cloth. There were drawings, too. Lina had done the drawings out of her imagination. They showed a city that looked somewhat like Ember, except that its buildings were lighter and taller and had more windows. One of the drawings had fallen to the floor. Lina retrieved it and pinned it back up. She stood for a minute and looked at the pictures. Over and over, she'd drawn the same city. Sometimes she drew it as seen from afar. Sometimes she chose one of its buildings and drew it in detail. She put in stairways and street lamps and carts. Sometimes she tried to draw the people who lived in the city, though she wasn't good at drawing people. Their heads always came out too small, and their hands looked like spiders. One picture showed a scene in which the people of the city greeted her when she arrived, the first person they had ever seen to come from elsewhere. They argued with each other about who should be the first to invite her home. Lina could see this city so clearly in her mind, she almost believed it was real. She knew it couldn't be, though. The Book of the City of Ember, which all children studied in school, taught otherwise. The City of Ember was made for us long ago by the builders, the book said. It is the only light in the dark world. Beyond Ember, the darkness goes on forever in all directions.